How to Be Happy Podcast, episode number 4, JaredAkers.com. Welcome to the How to Be Happy Podcast with Jared and Emily Akers, where we talk about life, love, happiness, respect for yourself and your partners in life. So open your hearts and your minds and get ready to be honest, be loved, and be happy. Welcome, welcome, welcome everybody to the How to Be Happy Podcast with Jared and Emily Akers. This is episode number 4, and I'm Jared Akers.
And I'm Emily.
Welcome. Today's topic, we were just sitting around talking about, she was talking to somebody at work today, and we had another topic, but actually the topic that we're going to talk about is dealing with death. And I know that sounds kind of morbid, but we have some kind of perspective on that. And
we all have to deal with eventually.
Yeah, it is. You know, or how's the saying go? No one's getting out of this alive. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and inevitably, you know, we all go through it. So, and I had something 2010 that I dealt with. So, but we'll get into that. But I don't know. What's your take on that?
On
death.
Ooh.
Death.
Well, it's always difficult to lose someone you love. Your life is different, certainly. But I choose to use it as a celebration of the relationship that we had, the time we had together, the life that the person that's gone now lived. And
well, let's start off with, you had kind of an experience with death early on, so why don't you explain that a little bit?
When I was 20, my mother was killed in a car accident. And she was 46. Then there were 6 of us kids. She was a single parent, and it was a rough, rough go for all of us. But, you know, now that I can look back, I mean, it certainly brought us all closer. You know,
You weren't living at home at the time, were you?
No, I was living out of state at the time, and came home for the funeral. And actually, my brother was visiting me when it happened, and it was tragic. It was horrible. It was amazing, though, if you think about it. Had it happened any other time, I would have been on that plane ride alone, coming home. And I was with my brother. As hard as that was, you know, we certainly had each other to lean on, and he's now gone as well. So, it's, you know, all a journey. Life is a journey, and, you know, it's inevitable that people will come and go in your lives.
Yeah.
And in your life. Lives. I don't know. I feel like I've lived several lives.
Well, when, you know, one of the things that I went through with my father's death was before that, whenever people had passed away or somebody that I knew lost someone that they loved, there was always that, you know, kind of awkward feeling mm-hmm. around them. You know, what do you say? You know, and you had talked about, you know, listed down some things like listening and empathy and stuff like that.
You know, I think that you're not really required to say anything. You know, I think when somebody is experiencing a loss, they want someone to listen. And like today, a lady that I know lost her brother and buried him today in the rain. What a drag. And I asked her how she was doing, and she said, it's rough and I'm getting through it. And, you know, I said, well, I just want you to know that I'm really sorry that that's happened. And she just started talking.
Yeah.
And it was really neat. I felt trusted, you know. I felt honored that she would share with me and felt comfortable to do that. And, you know, I think people worry about what to say when it's really the person going through it that has plenty to say.
Yeah. So, well, I know that, like, well, for me,
time to listen.
My father, for anybody that doesn't know that's listening to this, he was diagnosed with terminal lung cancer on
July.
Well, it was June 25th. Well, June 25th, we got a call. My mother called me and said that Dad had been kind of having some problems, and they thought it was pneumonia or something, but he hadn't felt well for a while, and he had just kind of retired before that, about a year before that. And so he ended up going to the you know, they went to a bunch of different doctors, and they ended up going to the doctor, and they did a CAT scan. They found 5 tumors in his brain, and this was on Friday the 25th. And so she called and told me, and I thought, wow, you know, and kind of I don't know, I had some experience with, because your brother had cancer, and I remember thinking, well, if it was 5 tumors in the brain, you know, that's probably not where it started. It's metastasized, and I don't know how I knew that. I just kind of figured that. And the next morning, I went home, and they did a biopsy of the lymph node on his neck, and they confirmed that it was terminal lung cancer. And I remember sitting in that little room, you know, with you, and we were outside there, and the doctor was...
With the doctor and the... Immediate family.
Yeah, and the surgeon said, you know, it is terminal lung cancer, or I don't think he really said it was lung cancer at that point in time, but he said from his experience he knew that the lymph node was, and it's metastasized, you know, stage 4. And I remember him specifically saying, all we can do now is pray that God has mercy.
Yeah, there's no treatment.
He said it's in God's hands now. And I remember the first thing that came to my mind was, well, it's always been in God's hands. Mm. And I don't know why I thought that, but then I think at that moment I kind of went into like shock.
Right.
And I kind of remember like, leaving my body, not to sound weird, but it was kind of like, you know, I was in shock kind of. So I was kind of like the next few days and everything, I was kind of going through this, like I was in a movie, you know, and I was watching, this was somebody else's movie. This was supposed to be my story, you know?
It's part of the denial process.
Yeah. And then we ended up going to Florida to spend some time with our good friend Duncan down there. And I kind of talked to my dad, you know, and kind of talked it over.
Every day you talked.
Yeah. Whether or not I should go. And because no one had really talked about time, like how much time he had or anything, but I knew from experience that probably 6 months or to 9 months would be optimistic. But so we went down there, and well, before that, we went, actually, Duncan was still in town. We went over to his house, and I remember sitting around, we were talking about it, and I was so consumed with this, how do I help Dad get right with God and get, you know, be okay with his mortality and all these things? Because when we were leaving, well, to jump back, when we left the little room and I went with Dad, we got on the elevator and he was on his gurney and he looked at my mother and I and he asked if it was, you know, in his voice, I just remember, never forget that. He said, you know, is it cancer? And we said, yes, you know, and then I said, it is what it is. And sometimes I wonder if that wasn't the most compassionate thing to say, but it's what I said. And so then I kind of knew that over this next period of, I don't know, months or weeks or whatever it was going to be, I knew it wasn't going to be easy, but I knew that I'd be able to look back at this point in time in my life and realize that I do everything right, you know, that I do everything that I could. And then getting back to when we got back to town, we went over to our friend's house and we were talking about it. And I was talking about this feeling of trying to help Dad get okay with his place, you know, with his mortality and that kind of thing. And I don't remember if you said it or if Duncan said it, but someone was like, well, you know, it's not your job to do that. It's just your job to be a son, you know, and that's his job. And that kind of...
It's his choice.
Yeah, that kind of made me feel okay. And when I looked at it even deeper, what I realized was it was really the fear of my own mortality that was really making me uncomfortable.
I think that's why death is so uncomfortable. Obviously, you're missing someone if they've passed, but yes, it also makes you think, well, this could have been me, especially if it's a sibling, which I've unfortunately also lost 2 brothers, one in a sudden death, he drowned, and another who was diagnosed with bladder cancer and given 6 months and made it 9.
I remember the day you got that call. We were at...
Oh, it was, you know, I can look back over that whole experience and, you know, of course I was devastated when my brother called me. We were ordering food at Culver's. We were waiting for our food, and I got the call, and it was like time stands still at that point, and all those people in that restaurant didn't exist, and it was just me on that phone with my brother, and everything else was a blur, and I started to cry, and I knew I needed to go sit down, and I went and sat down, and I was crying and just trying to make sense of it and trying to be coherent with my little brother, and this complete stranger came up to me and she said something.
She said
something about,
it's in God's hands now.
It's in God's hands. And
or something like that.
He'll take
just
care of
out
you.
Out of the blue. Yeah,
yeah, it was out of the blue. And then she even took it a step further and went and got a box of Kleenex for me.
Yeah.
Total stranger. Never met her in my life.
And she didn't know what was going on.
And it was, I look back now and, you know, there's always an angel when you need it.
Yeah. And we hadn't been dating that long.
I've been very fortunate. Yeah.
We hadn't been dating that long, and I remember well.
Well, then you came over to me, and you took me by the shoulders, and you said, hey, we're going to get through this. you know, and it was amazing that when you put your hands on my shoulders that I really did feel stronger from just that touch.
Yeah.
Really made it easier for me. So it is important to be there for people when they're going through a tough time. It does make a difference.
Yes.
Even though you feel helpless and inadequate, you know, and obviously you can't take the pain away, but you really can give your strength, you know, to that person that's suffering. So, you know, don't keep it to yourself. Go ahead and go out on a limb and offer yourself, you know, be available to them. Let them know day or night, call me anytime. I'm right here.
Yeah. And when, then we ended up after, you know, learning my father's thing, we ended up going to Florida. And I remember
4th of July.
Yeah. I called him every day and I talked to him.
Amazing conversations you had.
Yeah. You know, with my dad, it was kind of like, I have a blog post on my blog about learning my father's love language. And I always wanted this deep, emotional, touchy-feely kind of, you know, because I'm kind of cerebral and mm-hmm. I wanted, or whatever.
Expressive, yeah.
You know, and I wanted my, you know, to get that conversation,
available.
You know, that thing with my dad going. And you had told me just a few years before that, before he passed away, which I'll get to in a minute, but you had said, well, he's a simple man, you know, and I learned to understand, like, when I'd go home and I'd say, hey, Dad, what are your dreams or what are your passions? You know, what do you want to do? What do you think about this? And he'd be like, well, I got that motor fixed on the bass boat. Let me show that to you, you know? And I'd be
yeah.
like, okay, Dad. So
right.
that, you know, I had to learn that that's the way he expresses himself. And I changed. And so I learned his love language. And so we were in Florida, and I remember talking to another good friend of mine who is kind of a, I don't know, I guess a, kind of a spiritual advisor, and Robin. And he had recently lost his mother. And he said, which didn't make any sense at the time, but he said, you know, death is tragic, but it can also be very beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, what are you talking about? You know?
Yeah.
And it was like, I didn't really understand. But then skip ahead. We go to Florida. I talked to him every day. We came back on July 4th.
We were just gone like 4 days.
Yeah, just like 4 days.
Long weekend.
And Dad had started this kind of this radiation thing on the tumors in his brain. And we went home to see him and spent a couple hours with him and they lived about an hour. They live about an hour away. And
it's more like 2.5 hours.
It's an hour and a half.
Just counting.
So we, far enough away that, I don't know, I guess it wasn't a Raymond or Everyone Loves Raymond episode where.
Why is everything an hour away?
Well, you got to get this right distance because you don't want to be close enough to your parents that they can come and
drop in anytime,
but you don't want to be so far away that they
yeah.
feel like they have to stay the night. So there's like this perfect.
No, they're the distance that they're going to want to spend the night.
Yeah. So anyway, so we went and spent a couple hours with him and he was his normal self, you know, and was talking about things, and you gave him a haircut.
I did.
Yeah.
And it was wonderful. I have never given him a haircut before. And your father was always so kind to me and so loving. And, you know, we had a great connection. He and I mean, when he'd talk about you, I swear he was 10 feet tall. So proud of you. So, and, you know, tell me about that time you went to jail when you were a kid. And he goes, he was a good kid. I only had to get him out of jail a couple of times. I'm like, really?
Thank God for small towns. Cause...
But it was the typical father-son, hell, the son can do no wrong kind of thing.
Yeah.
I never really had that from
well,
my parents.
Well, he let me get away with a lot.
Yeah,
he was a lot stricter
did.
With
what
my
is
sister.
That like? I just never got away with a thing.
I had an older sister, and Mom used to get so angry because I really didn't, you know, if I was home before breakfast.
Double standard.
You know, yeah, it was.
Still exists, definitely exists yeah. in my family as well.
So
at least my father admits to it.
Yeah. Well, he does, yeah.
Yeah, he owns it. He yeah. does. Mm-hmm.
So we spent mm-hmm. some time with my father, and then we left.
Yeah.
And this was on the 5th.
On the 5th of July,
yeah.
which incidentally was the day that my mother died back in 82. Same day.
That's right.
And we talked about it,
yeah,
actually.
Yeah. So we get back home, and then the next day, I can't remember if I went to work or not, but the next night, my sister...
You know, my memory is that we had just gotten home, and
no,
we had to turn around and go back, because I thought Lori came that day.
No, she came on the 6th. And so...
See,
they
I
called,
lost a day somewhere.
They called that night, and Mom had called, and the paramedics were there, and he had collapsed on the kitchen, the dining room floor, and we were pretty sure it was a pulmonary embolism, but he ended up, you know, 10 days after he was diagnosed, he passed away, And
never even had a chance to really let it sink in.
No, I was just kind of getting used to the fact. And then so we went through the whole ordeal of making the preparations. And then where the beauty thing comes in was my sister and my niece, they were there when all this happened. And then we were all together when we were going through a bunch of pictures and stuff to show at the service for my father. And we're looking through all these pictures, and my little niece, who was, I think, was 5 at the time or 4.
Yeah, I think
she had to have been at least 5, mm-hmm. I think. But anyway, yeah. And I hope I'm right. But she said, you know, she kind of knew what was going on, I think, somewhat, maybe, right. Not really understanding it. But, you know, she just said out of the blue, you know, it's too bad that Grandpa died, but it's great we have all these pictures of him.
Yeah.
And I was thinking, no, that is beautiful. That's a good perspective. And then, you know, I shared at his funeral that
it was beautiful.
The dad's always on time. He was always prompt. So
Jared got up and eulogized his father, and I don't think there was a dry eye in the place. And your father would have been so proud of you, and was, I'm sure, very proud of the way that you held yourself together. And you gave the most amazing eulogy I've ever heard in my life. In fact,
it was, I remember the theme.
You grew in my eyes.
The theme was, I can accept it, but I don't have to like it.
Yeah.
You know, and Dad was always prompt. He was only, my sister told a story at the funeral that Dad was only late twice ever. And his, one was because he had car trouble. And the other time was because he had to pick a guy up and the guy was late. So I think that was it. Yeah. But he was very prompt, and somebody else, you know, made a funny story like, yeah, Dad would say, he was like a foreman, and he would say, yeah, we're going to cut out early today, and, you know, 5 minutes till closing time. He's like, hey, why don't you guys go ahead and get out of here? And they're like, hey, thanks, Marvin. I think Dean was the one that had said that, or maybe it was Scott. I don't know. I can't remember, but it was funny. So
I think that when people pass too, and they're like family and you go through all their things, you learn more about them than you knew even when they were living.
Yeah.
You have an opportunity to. You know, I know with my older brother, when he died, we found and are still finding pictures that he had that it totally surprised me that he had all these pictures, you know, more than pictures than I do. And I thought I had a lot of pictures, but he did have a sentimental side. You know, he was interested in family, just wasn't good at it.
Sharing
it with us, right, expressing it.
Well, and I think, too, one thing that I realized is that a lot of guys and stuff that my dad worked with, and there was a lot of people that probably knew my father a lot better than I did, obviously.
Right. They spent every day with him.
Yeah, you know, and so that was kind of like a sense of, you know, maybe learn something from them if I feel like I need to, or, you know, it's kind of interesting.
You do learn a lot more about a person after they're gone, I think.
So the idea,
so
you know.
So that's the beautiful part.
Well, just the idea that Robin had said that to me, and then I was open to the possibility of that.
Mm-hmm.
I could look for that, and it changed the whole perspective. You know, it's still tough, but
I know what it's like to, you know, be young. And when my mother died, and I felt so sorry for myself, and I stayed in that gloom and doom for a very, very long time, which I've labeled it the victim role, you know, poor me, how am I going to live my life? It's not worth living.
Yeah.
And I felt that way for quite a while, you know, and I had a lot of angels come along the way and try to pull me out of it, but I was determined to be miserable.
Yeah.
And I know when I lost my brother Danny, it was very difficult, and I mourned and grieved. And
now, how long was
really
that after your mother?
Really wallowed in it. Mother was 82, and Danny was 95 or 6. Okay. I can't remember. It was one of the two. And then
he was young. He was
33. Yeah. Yeah, that was tough. He was my best friend. Mother was my best friend at the time that she died, and then Danny was my best friend.
So did that jade you at all, you know?
You know,
if that's the right term.
No.
Jaded you?
I think it's made me stronger, and I think it's, you know, helped me to be more compassionate and certainly more grateful for the people that I do have.
Yeah.
And, of course, I miss them very much.
Well, I think the ultimate place to get to is where you neither fear, I heard someone say, neither fear living nor dying.
How about you? Has it jaded you?
No. No, I remember when my grandfather passed away when I was just into college, And I remember sitting around seeing all these people say, they were saying things like, oh, he's in a much better place now, and all those mm-hmm. things that people say. And I was thinking, right? Oh, they're so full of crap. Mm-hmm. You know, I was thinking, you know, oh, that's nice that they have something that they think that makes them feel better. But that was the seed that was planted, because I remember thinking, they feel better.
Mm-hmm.
So does it really matter why they feel better?
Well, and you know, it also gives some weight to what you were talking about earlier. People don't know what to say.
Yeah.
And those are the typical things that people say. Oh, they're not suffering had they been ill, and oh, well, they won't have to suffer, and look for the bright side. But that's actually a coping mechanism. That's a positive.
Well, yeah. And the saying, you know, if you actually Google everything happens for a reason, I think I come up like first or second, depending on what day it is. But that saying, I don't, you know, it's like people, everything happens for a reason, dude. I'm like, dude, you're going to get smacked for no reason. Because, you know, it's, I know that people say it, and a lot of times I think, well, they don't even know what they're talking about when they say that. You know, it's because they don't really know anything else. And, you know, that's my cynical brain talking.
Yeah.
But what I've learned is that it's what things I do.
Happen.
It's what I learn from it that gives reason to it.
Right.
You know, it's the book, The Christmas Sweater by Glenn Beck, I believe. He talks about the little boy in there, his father dies. And so the little boy's all, you know, jaded, which is the buzzword, I guess, for this episode. But, and his mother, you know, he's ticked off because he doesn't get a bike for Christmas. He gets this sweater instead of a bike. And his mother finally looks at him and says, you know, it's about time you learn that, you know, things in life happen, you know, I don't know, I'm paraphrasing now, but that it's up to you to learn from things that happen and let them take you to where you're supposed to go and not just where you've ended up.
Mm.
You know, so it's like, you know, things happen around me, not to me.
Yeah.
You know, so do you hear that?
Mm-hmm.
What is that? A phone ringing?
It's telling me I have a voicemail.
Oh, maybe. Hopefully you won't be able to hear it on the recording. But so, you know, letting things take, you know, so it's all about perspective. And I think, you know, I didn't just wake up one day that way, but it certainly, I don't know, it was kind of a process, you know, getting to that point. So was there any, like, is there anything that's taboo that you don't say when?
Oh, taboo. I don't know.
Everything happens for a reason, dude.
Yeah.
You know? No, I mean, I
think
you
when
can say
someone's,
I'm not saying that. That's,
to me, what's taboo is when you make it about you.
Oh, that's a good one.
Yeah.
Tell the story about your friend's mother who passed away, and you were there. This was kind of, this is a very enlightening moment you had. You went, she was, her mother's funeral was at the same place where your mother's funeral was.
Oh,
remember? And you went
right
there.
Right. A girl that I worked with, well, we both rent from the same business. I mean, we have separate businesses within the same building, I should say.
Yeah.
And her mother passed away, and she'd been ill, and so I went to the visitation, and as I was driving there, I was kind of getting that deja vu feeling, and then as I got there, I realized this was the same funeral home that my mother had been in all those years ago, and as I'm walking in, I'm just feeling this sense of doom and just kind of the feelings that I felt, you know, when I was 20 years old. And I'm walking in, and I realize it's the same exact room.
Oh, gosh.
And she's in the same exact place. And she kind of looked like her. I mean, they both had dark hair, and it's just really bizarre. So I went and, you know, I paid my respects and told her I had to leave because I was so uncomfortable with being in there. So in that sense, I did make it about me, and I regret that.
Well, I
guess I had some unfinished business there, but it was also something that bonded us. I've actually had a couple of girls that I work with, their mothers have died there, so I kind of get the two mixed up sometimes.
Yeah.
But
I mean, that's normal.
It does
though,
bond
you,
know, when you know, like.
But I think you realize, but the point
was, if you both lost your mother, well, I told her that at the time, I said, you know, I don't have a mother either, so we can just be each other's mother.
But I think the most enlightening part is that you realized you were making it about you.
Right.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we all, you know, as humans, and the ego wants, you know, is constantly asking, what's in it for me? And that's natural, but I think it's healthier once we begin to know ourselves and be emotionally connected and recognize those thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm making this about me. It's not about me.
Right. You know, there's nothing wrong with saying, listen, it's not about me. Let's talk about you. How are you? What can I do for you?
Yeah.
It's okay. It's okay to admit that you may have gotten off track.
So then I have down here, moving on, celebration. Celebrate
good times. Come I think it's all a celebration of their lives. I love the eulogy funerals where everybody gets up and talks.
Yeah, the problem with that, though, is like we did that at my dad's thing, but a lot of people don't get up because, you know,
well,
I did,
okay.
My sister did. I don't know. It was kind of...
I certainly didn't at my mother's.
Yes.
Yeah. And I wish I had. I don't think that I was in any emotional position to do it then.
Well, it's uncomfortable
but
for people.
With my brother Danny's passing and my brother Chris's passing, I definitely did get up and say something. And I think it's a real important part of the closure process to do something that makes you uncomfortable, to honor someone's life, you know. Well, here, I'm inconvenienced for getting up in front of a bunch of people that are there because I'm hurting. They're there for us.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm afraid to speak to them. What is that?
Yeah.
So get over it and get your butt up there and do it. And I'm glad I did it.
Well,
he deserves at least that.
Yeah, and I don't know.
Celebrate their life. Share with people. I still share things that I've learned from people I've lost.
So the place, you know, it seems like the goal or the place in life to get, which, you know, is to where you neither fear living nor dying, as I said earlier, because for a long time I feared living because it was so difficult, you know, and life is hard. And, you know, it's like, well, compared to what, really, you know, because
exactly
this is it, you know, you better get used to it. And but for me, it was living with myself that I really didn't like, you know. And so once I went through this whole process of self-discovery and all the stuff I talk about in my upcoming book, you know, and the steps that I went through in the process, that I learn and accept myself and know that it's enough. And, you know, I wake up today and I go to bed at night and I'm thinking, you know, if I died tonight in my sleep, that's okay. I mean, that'd suck.
No, it's not okay.
Well, you know, but
not okay with me, but
I mean, I can still, you know, get the whirling dervishes or whatever they call in your head where I'm laying there for hours thinking, you know, I got this pain in my chest. Oh my God, I got a tumor, you know, and, you know, and I could have one. I don't know. It's possible.
Never know.
You don't ever know.
And then there's the cliche line, live every day like it's your last.
Well, you know, we should.
I pretty much do. Yeah. I tell people how I feel about them.
Except
because this might be the last time I see them. Not that I'm being morbid, but
well, no, but
I make it a point to tell people I appreciate them,
well,
I care about them.
And I do that too now because it's the nudge of my conscience that keeps me not feeling okay with who I am. So when I say something to somebody, even at work, or I made a comment to a guy I work with who I don't know if they even listened to this, but a few weeks ago, and we were talking about, you know, going out and stuff, and I don't go out and party anymore and stuff like that or even drink at all. So we were talking about that, and I was like, well, you know, they were going to go out and do some stuff. And I thought, well, you know, I don't know if I'm up for that or not. But, and I said something like, you know, I try to do things to add value to my life, and it came out really bad. You know, it's like, well, these people don't add any value to my life, so I'm not hanging out with them outside of work, you know, and it just, and I thought about it, and I think it was the next day or a couple of days later, I said, you know, that really came out wrong, and I don't mean that you guys don't add value to my life, because that's certainly not the case, but, you know, I enjoy my home life. I love coming home and spending time with you. So,
isn't that nice?
You know, and I go and participate in work things and stuff. So what about, you know, so like a bucket list? You know, do you believe in a bucket list?
Yeah.
Never trust a fart.
That was a great movie. Of course, they had unlimited funds.
I just snorted.
But you did snort.
I did.
It was cute.
Was it?
Oh, so nice.
Man, I killed myself tonight.
I hope not.
Well, no. I mean, I was trying to. I caused myself, I inflicted pain on myself.
I did hear you.
Razor thing. So I'm trying to, you know, I'm trying to get this goatee kind of thing going so it adds some dynamics, you know, to my face. And, you know, and I was trying to get the little 3-day look with this razor, and I had the guard on there, and it was like yanking the hairs out instead of like cutting them, and it just really hurt.
I'm sorry.
So I think I'm not doing it right. I thought you were supposed to go against the grain with this clippers.
I know, honey, but I did tell you to go with the grain, but...
Yeah, but then I can't...
Maybe you'll try that next time.
Yeah. Maybe I'll just cut it off because I need to get it. I need to get it shaved below my nose so when we go diving,
we probably just want to shave
my
before
mask
we go diving.
Leaks a little bit.
Yeah, you don't need that.
Yeah. So the bucket list. Is there anything on your bucket list besides?
Gosh, Yeah, there's some things I want to do. I want to go to Greece. I want to go to Europe.
Yeah, good
definitely
diving.
I want to do Europe. I want to do New Zealand. I want to do Fiji.
Fiji would be good. Bora Bora.
I have a pretty long bucket list as far
as those are all
places
to
visit.
Go, but there's nothing
things
you want
to
do.
That I want to do.
People?
Yes, I want to take our granddaughter to the beach.
Me, I hope.
I want to, take you?
No. Never mind. Go to the beach?
You're hoping you're on my bucket list?
Yeah. That's it.
You're kind of on my bucket list.
I know. I am your bucket list.
I mean, you are,
right?
Yeah, you are. You're my co-bucket list.
Kick the bucket.
It is kind of funny when we fly and that we get a little turbulence and you think, okay, this is it. We're going down. I just grab his hand. I'm like, okay, we're getting our wish.
Yeah, look me in the
eyes. Going
down
together.
Right here. Right here.
This may be it.
This could be it.
Yep. We're going to go together.
Yeah.
How romantic.
I don't think there's anything. I think Greece would be cool. Some of the little islands.
Yeah.
You know. And I'm not big on boats, so any place that's got pretty good shore diving.
Yeah.
Hawaii was beautiful. I wouldn't mind going back there, but you know.
It was magnificent.
Bora Bora, as I said, that is.
There's plenty of places.
Yeah.
With beach and sand. And
I always thought I wanted to skydive, but I'm not real sure. I'd like to keep my butt, as Duncan says,
I'd like to keep my
butt below my head, if at all possible.
Yeah, I'm not jumping
at all
out
times.
Of anything. I'll go as deep as you want in the ocean, but
really?
Don't get me up on a riff or, you know. I did do the zip lining.
In Mexico,
Even though it wasn't on my bucket list, now I can say that it is no longer.
Well, we did this, you know, the whole four-wheeler jungle zipline tour, but let me tell you, it was actually a four-wheel tour through rural Mexico. Yeah, down dirt roads.
Oh, it's filthy.
It was.
We were pretty miserable, really.
Never
but
did
even
get
that was fun.
Yeah, it was pretty fun. We had
some
fun.
I do like those little three. Was it a three-wheeler or four-wheeler?
It was a four-wheeler.
Four-wheeler.
Yeah.
They are pretty much, they're fun.
Yeah. I would like to actually do it in the jungle. I mean, it was.
Yeah. That's a lot better.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like to ride horses.
Although the trails in the, I'm not sure you'd like the jungle because it's very narrow.
Well, I'd like to ride horses through the jungle up in Hawaii. There's a ranch up somewhere. it's got horses.
Yeah?
Yeah.
That'd be fun.
Yeah, it'd be fun for
I don't know if I want to go in the... I always think about all these things flying off the trees and landing in my hair.
Bungee jumping? I won't do.
No, thanks.
No. I won't even do that thing at the... We have a... What's called the ripcord or whatever at our local amusement park where they swing you up and you get in this thing and let go and... Choo, no, thanks.
No, don't need it.
No.
I've really done all that kind of...
Diving is about as extreme as... Mm-hmm. I don't really consider that extreme sport. I think some people
do.
Well,
it is. It is. A lot of people won't do it. But we sure love it.
Yeah.
It's a neat experience. And the people you meet are really... You know, you have something in common. And it's just fun.
So do you fear death?
I don't.
The Reaper?
I'm not afraid of dying. I'm not ready to leave.
Yeah.
You know, I think about, I want to see more of my son growing up and I want to see Juniper growing up.
Little Juju. We have a granddaughter.
Work-wise, you know, I've been doing the same thing for 27 years. So, you know, I don't know that there's anything I haven't experienced in the hair world. I don't know it all, certainly, but.
Well, I've certainly got that covered.
I know quite a bit of it.
From zookeeping to climbing down chimneys for a living to building houses to laying tile to I worked in the children's. I mean, I've done, you name it.
Yeah.
Hospital.
I don't think there's any jobs. I would like to write a book.
Yeah?
Now that you've written your book, I feel the pressure.
Well, hopefully that should be out in a couple months.
Really proud of
months.
You.
I'm in the final copy editing stages, getting the cover design.
It's a lot of work.
It is.
You've been very diligent.
It is.
It's a beautiful book.
But, you know, once I got to that point in March of 2006 where death seemed like a logical choice or was an option because everything else just seemed so difficult after that, and making that decision, which wasn't easy at the time, but I'm glad I made it, obviously, to live and choose life and do whatever I could to find happiness and, you know, do whatever it took. Since that point, everything is just gravy, you know, to me. It's like, you know, job, what
pull
I do,
pull yourself out of the,
I can be of service no matter what I do for a living, you know, and I think it's that, it was the movie, it's actually a book first, I think, The Peaceful Warrior, Way of the Peaceful Warrior, and it was a movie, and there's the guy in there, the old mentor, whatever you want to call him.
McNulty?
Yeah.
Did he play that? His name worked in the garage?
Yeah, Socrates. Oh. And the kid comes up, and he's asking him all these things, and Socrates goes, you know, he goes, well, the, you know, it's to be a...
Service to others.
He goes, no, you work in a gas station.
Yeah.
He goes, well, there's no higher service. He goes, what, pumping gas? And he goes, no, being of service. It's a service station. Or something like that. You know, but it's like there's no higher calling. And I've always thought,
exactly,
you know, what a wonderful world it would be if we all overcame our biggest challenges and then dedicated our lives to helping others the same.
Yeah.
You know. And I always liked,
I do get a lot more out of working now that I think about it, what I'm giving other people rather than what I'm getting for myself.
Yeah.
You know, that just turning it around and, you know, knowing that I can make a difference in someone's life and, you know, whether it's listening to problems that they have or helping them find a better hairstyle so they can feel better about themselves, or, you know, people get really frustrated when they can't figure these things out and I can sometimes help them and it feels really good and I get a lot out of it. So in that respect, I can do it forever. But I think that anything you do, as long as you're, you know, thinking about what are you doing for someone else rather than what is it doing for me, there's no room for disappointment.
Right, and that
if I
was
can be of service.
And that's the way that I try to live most of the time now, and it's definitely a process because I had no clue what that meant or how to do that or that way of thinking even existed. For my life, I was a narcissist. I wasn't mean. What did I say? I was a romantic narcissist or something or something like that. I liked making people laugh and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And people thought I was joyful and positive, but everything was from a perspective of how's this going to affect me?
Yeah.
I wasn't mean. I didn't go out and intentionally hurt people, but now my perspective is completely different. And it was just a process of working through all of these things.
Mm-hmm. It doesn't mean that occasionally you don't have thoughts of...
Oh, no. I mean, it's your ego. It's human nature.
And that's okay to say, oops. Today marks... We're halfway through winter today.
Halfway through winter.
Halfway
Thank
through.
Goodness.
Yeah. It's just been such a rough winter.
Yesterday was Groundhog Day. Did he see his shadow?
Yes, he did. Six more weeks.
He did.
Yeah.
6 more weeks of what? 50-degree weather?
Yeah.
Gee, okay.
If this is what we're going to have, I don't think anyone's going to complain about it.
I mean,
it.
Is that global warming or what is that about?
You know, I always wondered about that.
Because they say it's not, they say it is, you know.
To me, it was getting colder and colder until this winter and then...
Oh, geez, last winter.
It's been California weather. It's been amazing.
Oh, it's been
this
great.
Year.
Been able to run
Other
outside.
Than maybe a little dry, but...
Not today.
No. Made up for it today, for sure.
Yeah. So we have a trip coming up again. You know, we talk about it in a couple months. We're going back down to Belize, and it's like, I try not to... We're excited, but then we have to remind each other, you know, let's concentrate on today and what we're doing. And
today's great. It is fun planning for a trip, though. It's, you know, it's a nice thing.
Yeah.
I think that's almost there's a lot of good parts of a trip, but I think the before part is, you know, all the anticipation and excitement and, you know, finding little things you can take that, you know, like little travel-sized things. And
I've been in a bigger mindset these last, I don't know, 3 or 4 trips to consciously make an effort to, you know, well, for one, which we've talked about before, not plan everything.
Mm, relax.
And just stay
Go
in
the
moment.
Flow.
And I can, like, make this, you know, this vacation last seemingly forever.
Yeah.
You know.
Relax.
And I try to, you know, remind myself to do that every single day.
Yeah.
You know? So getting back to the topic before we get done here, the dealing with death. And, you know, when I first, we talked about that as a topic, I didn't want, you know, I thought, oh, crap, you know, is it going to be this morbid thing, people? But, you know, I think it's something we all go through, you know, and it is part of life.
Necessary part of life.
And
we're not getting out of this life without experiencing it.
That's right. The only thing we can do is live today.
Yeah.
You know, and it's such a cliche. Live today.
But go ahead and reach out. You know, reach out to the people around you. People are there for a reason.
But it's so
they
true.
Want to help you. And, you know, that gives them pleasure to be, you know, available to you. So,
well, and when I was going through my thing, what I was going to say too also is that two also, is that a double negative or something
like
that? Is that, you know, I was trying to think what did I want people to say to me? And it really, I really wasn't hearing anything people were saying.
Yeah,
really,
you really, yeah.
Because I was in this, you know.
Yeah.
So, but it was just nice to know that, you know, a lot of times it was nice just someone come up and I knew that they knew, but they talked about something else.
Mm.
You know, they asked me about work or whatever, my hobbies or, you know, some other things, you know, and just, I think a gesture, you know, just a small gesture, a touch or something, you know, just, you know, a look in the eye and, you know, cause sometimes it's like, I might not be thinking about it at that second. And then
and
you
I
come
think
up and bring
too,
it up.
Like, you know, when you go to the funeral and everybody's around and, you know, you're trying to compete for their time, compete with others for their time. And, you know, it is kind of a blur, you know, it wouldn't hurt to wait a few weeks and then, you know, check in on people. Make sure they're, you know, getting through things all right and, you know, invite them out to lunch.
Yeah.
You know, make a gesture to let them know that life is for the living. Get out and, you know.
That's right. And we've talked about now, if I go, I definitely, you know, I want you to be extremely distraught.
Okay.
And no, I want you to be happy and.
You heard it here.
And go on and live, you know, and I know you've told me likewise.
It's different. It will, you know, if when you lose someone, your life is different, but it's certainly not over.
Yeah.
That part of your life is over. And there's something else to discover. You know, you still have relationships and people that count on you. And
that doesn't mean that you can't find happiness.
You know, all of my life, people have told me, you know, when they lose their husband or their wife, you know, they'll never love again. They'll never find somebody, you know, that can replace that person, so why try? And I thought, oh, how sad. So they're just going to live the rest of their lives with no one. And now I understand what they mean.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, that's when I knew that I was going to ask you to marry me, when I realized that no matter what happened, I could not see a future without you in it.
Yeah.
You know, it's like...
Yeah.
Good or bad.
I've had my one great love.
Yeah.
I'm having...
Well, and it could end.
In the process.
You know.
Yeah. Could end. Yes, it can. Silence. Awkward.
Awkward. All right. Well, so that, I guess, is this episode on death and taxes. No.
Those are coming.
Taxes are coming up. Which we got to
Well, we can celebrate that, too.
Oh, we can. We can.
It'll be over soon.
Yeah. Got the Super
Bowl. Celebrate.
I know you're excited that we'll Super Bowl is coming up this weekend.
Yeah.
We got to...
That's all I think about.
We got to get some chili con queso going.
Yeah, I need to dust off my American Express.
Some, huh?
Some people watch football. I just go shopping.
Oh, right.
Yeah,
I gotcha.
Yeah.
I gotcha. We got our cameras.
Yeah, we got our camera cases.
I got one of those little GoPro Hero 2 little cameras to take.
We'll play with our new stuff while other people watch football.
Oh.
Oh, yeah, that.
Wow. Anyway,
thanks for joining us tonight.
Yes, thanks for joining us. And remember, you can call our How to Be Happy hotline at 775-234-8373. That is 775-234-8373. You can leave your name, where you're from, and a question or a topic, and we might use it on the show.
Oh, I hope you do.
Yes.
And get people involved.
Remember to be honest, be loved, and be happy.
Good night.